Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning. Gotta be fresh, gotta go downstairs. Gotta have my bowl, gotta have cereal. Seeing everything, the time is going. Ticking on and on, everybody's rushing. Gotta get down to the
man, I love the song. I forgot all about it. Friday, even though it's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
God, it's a great song. And it's a lot of time has passed. I didn't realize how much time has passed. We're out here at the Thomas and Mack. UNLV is coming up against Reno. 7 o'clock, 6:30 with running Rebel warm-up right here on ESPN Las Vegas. John Von Tobel is on the scene. Adam Hill, it's Steve Cofield. Angels helping us out at the T&M. Big Five time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five. Number five.
Well, we can't just ignore Rebecca Black. Adam found this one. Apparently, it's turned into a sad story. We played this song all the time, and this girl was 13, and I'm sure we dragged her in very mean fashion because we're just a mean show. Although I was probably one of the supporters of the lyrics. It connected with me. Does everyone remember the rest of the song? Ari, give us a little more.
It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
By the way, this is totally her voice.
Friday, Friday, getting down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward.
What's the problem? This is a great way to go into the weekend.
Sure.
Yeah. Hard.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was hard.
So. I thought it was hard, too. Partying hard. And then she climbs into a convertible with a bunch of 13-year-olds. I don't know how they're driving. She's, like, deciding what seat to get in.
Well, I like the 745 or driving on the highway because, you know, you party on Friday, but you got to be responsible. All right, you're a young middle school student. Can't go out too late. It's good.
More of the great lyrics from this, Ari.
You know what it is. I got this, you got this. My friend is by my right. Hey, I got this, you got this. Now you
got, like, a friend on the right, friend on the left. Got to pick the seat. Which seat can I take?
I'm surprised there's no reference to shotgun. Like, clearly you call shotgun.
Call it. It's too advanced. Friday.
Poor Rebecca Black.
She's still around.
She is. She's still singing, actually. She's still performing.
Okay. And now she's 22 now?
She is.
This was 9 years ago already?
She's 13.
You weren't even on the you were on the show, and then now you're gone, Von Tobel.
Your entire reign with the show happened in the time that this song came out. And
you were here, left, and came back. Since that song came out.
What, it came out 2011?
Yeah.
I wasn't even here yet.
That's what we're saying.
That's what we're saying. Oh, okay, ESPN Las Vegas experience was after this.
Yeah.
God, we're old.
I got to say, I only really remember the chorus. I don't remember.
The lyrics are tremendous. It's no Chinese food, which was a banger, but, you know.
What about Chocolate Rain?
Oh, Chocolate Rain.
Chocolate Rain. Is it Tay Zonde? Monday? I don't know.
Tay Zonde.
So what's happened with this girl?
Woman. As you said, she's 22. She's now performing.
Yeah.
Really hasn't struck the charts again like she did with Friday.
But she had her moment, and it must have been glorious to have a big hit like this.
Well, for a time it was, Steve. It was. What happened? Not all things are great in the world of the pop star. First of all, she didn't write the song. I don't know. It seems like a 13-year-old wrote it,
yeah.
But she actually paid a production company to write the song for her, and then she performed it, and then they made the video,
right.
Which, good on them. They made it blow up. She wrote on Instagram, 9 years ago today, a music video for a song called Friday was uploaded to the internet. Above all things, I just wish I could go back and talk to my 13-year-old self, who was terribly ashamed of herself and afraid of the world. To my 15-year-old self, who felt like she had nobody to talk about the depression she faced.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
After the song, she was depressed? Why? Because she got mocked on so much?
She got mocked
on
all the time. To my 17-year-old self, who would get to school only to get food thrown at her and her friends. This is getting funny.
Never been a good food fight.
First of all, 17-year-olds are not throwing food. Like, that's a much more of a middle school thing. Like, I don't
believe
they
were throwing rotten tomatoes.
Where'd she grow up?
Middle America? It had to be LA, right? I have no idea. Look that up.
Where's
Rebecca
Black
from? To my 19-year-old self, who had almost every producer, songwriter tell me they'd never work with me.
That's rough.
Hell, to myself a few days ago, who felt disgusting when she looked in the mirror. I'm trying to remind myself more and more that every day is a new opportunity to shift to reality and lift your spirit. You are not defined by any choice. She's saying, like, basically this was the worst choice.
This ruined her life.
Yeah.
Looks like born in Irvine, by the way.
Yeah, I figured.
Oh, wow.
It had to be
Southern California. Okay.
Yeah. not defined by anyone's choice or thing. Time heals and nothing is finite. It's a process that's never too late to begin. And so here we go. This might be a weird thing to post, but the honesty feels good, if nothing else. Making that song ruined her life, apparently. You would think it was the highlight of her life.
It made our 2011.
I also feel like
so she should know that. It brought happiness to us and our audience, I think.
Sure.
Or they were annoyed.
Oh, by the way, Rebecca Black.
Oh, she's clearly – okay, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
So part of the post, she posts – it's the image of her statement, and then it's two pictures. All right, one from then when she did the video.
Come on.
The other is she's clearly flexing on everybody else because she posted a picture of herself in which she looks very attractive.
Right, she's basically saying, look at how hot I am. She's got giant cans.
Yeah,
she's doing fine. She had 140 million views on YouTube. Her life for these 9 years is better than anything I've experienced in 50.
That's my other thing. Didn't she make, I would assume she made money off of this, right?
1.2 million Twitter followers, by the way.
Yeah, didn't she?
I don't know when YouTube started paying back end, like they pay, you know, pennies on the dollar, but 140 million views, you made some money off it. I don't know. This is a rough one. I mean, I need to know more about her story, but this is a rough one to take and be like, hey, you know, you had the worst teenage experience. I don't know.
See, and I call it the question, too, because she clearly had a lot of trouble picking the seat because there were so many people in the car. Like, she had a lot of fun.
She did have a lot of friends.
She had a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Clearly.
I don't remember at 13 having to
party in.
Yeah, party in hard.
Yeah.
I don't think I partied hard, and I may have had food thrown at
me. Did you ever have to decide which seat in the convertible to sit in?
There was no convertible. They just drove by laughing.
This is so ridiculous.
I think on my Friday night, I was just practicing 16-foot jumpers trying to get it off the glass. Make sure I was fundamentally sound.
How'd that work?
By myself.
That work out for you?
Yes. I launched into a dynamic intramural career in college.
Party.
So you didn't worry about getting down to the bus stop?
Hard.
Yeah. Catching your bus, seeing your friends.
We'll look into it more because I don't ever want to make a judgment call on a story like this because I've made some mistakes on the air in the past where let's find out the whole story.
Where's the Chinese food girl at? That's what I want to know.
Top four stories.
Number four.
Maybe these guys could do that story for the next 20 minutes.
Oh. I've got the lyrics called up. Ready to go.
Chinese food, man.
Number four.
The Pac-12 just lost a coach.
Chinese food.
Is the Pac-12 a have-not? We talk about the haves and the have-nots from a salary standpoint. And, you know, as an example, a group of five schools have a tough time hiring Power 5 coordinators. They can't take them away. Yeah, I mean, LSU, you got guys making $2 million a year. Group of five can't even pay their head coach that. Now we've got Colorado in the Pac-12. Paying a coach, which I thought was a good salary, at $2.6 million, and Michigan State's like, we need a coach. So, you know what? Screw it. Double it. We're going over $5 million. Come on, Mel Tucker. How should the Pac-12 feel now? Or is this more of a Colorado situation?
I think it might be a little bit of a Colorado situation, but I do think the Pac-12 has something to worry about. I think the view of the Pac-12 and a lot of the sports has been severely downgraded over the last few years.
I think David Shaw is the highest-paid coach in the Pac-12, and he's like not anywhere near like the top 25 in coaches' salaries. So if you want to be a major conference, you have to pay like one. And I don't know the details on it, but I have to imagine not being on DirecTV is a killer.
Yeah.
It's a killer. They make this network and they can't get it on anywhere.
It's part of it. Like the fact that there's people in China that can watch the Pac-12 network, but people out here can't because of their carrier is absolutely insane. But I think there's some troubling signs in the future for
it. I mention my school all the time, which has been a laughingstock at least the last like 5 years in football.
Yeah.
Rutgers. They hired a coach for $4 million a year, and the assistance pool was $7.7 million.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about in the Big Ten. And now Michigan just paid a guy in Tucker to steal him away over $5 million a year. Bruce Feldman, who broke the story last night, said how this unfolded is a prime example of the growing financial gap of resources between the Big Ten / SEC and the rest of college football. So it's not even really a Power 5 anymore. The way he's describing it, it's a Power 2.
Yeah.
And the ACC and the Pac-12 and to a certain extent the Big 12. Big 12 has a little more money, but they're lagging. The other thing here, a lot of people are mad at Mel Tucker for bailing right after signing day. I think he's a turncoat. A lot of media people are saying, hey, what would you do, you know, if your pay was doubled? There's also the player angle. Jay Billis was all annoyed today. He said the NCAA is concerned about player transfers and poaching. Tucker was under a multi-year contract at Colorado for just 1 year, so tortious interference with contract is okay, but player transfers are not. Amazing.
Absolutely right. It's the same thing we talked about if you weren't with us earlier. It is a week after the signing day, and all these kids would get excited to go to Colorado, and hey, you know what? This guy's going to make me into a man. He came into my family room and told my mom that I'm going to grow up and be strong and be right and be courageous, and then he's out after 7 days.
Are we just assuming, though? Maybe he went in there and he's like, you know what? They can come there if they want. I don't know how long I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be up front with you guys. Really good shot that I'm probably dipping the second something comes open.
Salaries
in
the Pac-12 are pretty mediocre. I mean, if the Big Ten job comes, yeah, of course I'm going to go.
And the best part, he leans into the kid and elbows him. You get what I'm saying, right?
Maybe he was honest. I think we're assuming that he was selling these guys on the fact that he's going to be there for a while.
You know, now that I'm a parent, if he came in and made that pitch, I'd be like, this guy's an honest guy. You should go play for
him. Do this.
If you suck, he'll tell you.
Every player in Colorado should be eligible to transfer with immediate eligibility, right?
Yep.
There shouldn't be any issues on that front. And now, by the way, it's getting real nasty on both sides because Colorado, I think it was the AD, said that Tucker chose not to talk to his players. There's other stories saying that he wanted to talk to his players in Colorado, and the folks at CU were like, you're not talking to them. Get out of here. That's how bad the split is.
Here's the thing: if you were going to make that rule that everybody can transfer, I'm totally for it. I absolutely think that they should have much more freedom of movement in college sports as athletes because coaches bounce around like they do. But if you were to make the rule, your coach bolts for another job, you get to transfer right away. Now, is that going to apply to any time the coach leaves? Because sometimes there is, you know, lack of clarity about why a coach is going. Maybe he's fired. Maybe he's dismissed. Whatever, for whatever reason.
Right.
Is it any time a coach is gone? Because if that is the case, that if your coach is gone, then you can freely leave, and then there's some ambiguity. Maybe there's a coach that's getting in trouble, and the school's like, okay, we want to fire him. He's a problem, but we don't want to lose all these kids. We have to keep him in the job.
Rocky Long situation? Like, right, retirement, or was it just a disagreement over money,
right,
and that's why he left?
And so I think you have to be careful about making – because I'm with it, unless you just say anybody can transfer whenever they want anyway, which I'm fine with also. But you do have to be kind of careful about, well, if a coach leaves, then you can leave. Then maybe you're keeping coaches in jobs that they shouldn't be there. Maybe they're a problem, but you're like, well, we don't want kids to leave, so we're going to keep them in place. It is kind of a gray area, but you could solve it by just saying kids can leave whenever they want.
Top three stories.
Number three.
All right, so next layer of the story is Eric Bieniemy, who was snubbed for all the NFL head coaching spots. Now folks are saying, hey, you know what? You want to be a head coach? Go to college football. Go to your alma mater, coach at Colorado. Many more folks are like, what? It's bullcrap. Why should he have to do that? He, just like, Matt Nagy and Nagy, whatever the hell his name is, and other coordinators, especially in the case of Matt Nagy, who was under Reed, got a job immediately, he should get an NFL job. Why should he have to drop down to Colorado? What do you think?
I mean, I agree. I'm not sure if drop down is the right term, but there's clearly
it is.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it's clearly if you're in this position where you want to be a football coach, whether it's a college, whatever. Clearly, the NFL is the best spot to be. You want to be a head coach of an NFL team, so it makes no sense. And I find it funny how immediately there's a lot of people who are like, "There you go, man. There's your opening. Go get it." And it's like, really? Because there were a lot of guys before that did just as much work, maybe a little bit less as an offense coordinator under Andy Reid, who got head coaching jobs. And in these situations, like, you're not quick to go, there you go, there's your head coaching job. And I feel like people are setting it up to go, he had an opportunity.
Right.
He had an opportunity, and he didn't want to take it. And now look at him. Now he's stuck as an offense coordinator.
Your guy Michael Lombardi said Eric Bieniemy should take the Colorado job if offered and show the world he can be a head coach. There are no perfect jobs, just jobs you make perfect. That did not get a good reaction from many, especially in the African-American community.
Yeah.
I can say it.
Well, I don't really – I disagree with the statement, show that you can be a head coach. Like, okay, why can't he show that he can be a head coach with an NFL team, right? Nagy got to go and do it. Peterson got to go and do it. Why can't he?
I wouldn't do it. There's college jobs I would drop down to take. Colorado's not a great job. I mean, clearly they're –
Well, especially now.
They're not going to pay him $4 million a year. It's a program that has struggled the last 15 years. So he's walking into a bad situation.
But if you're going to do – let's just say, for example – That is what he wanted to do, to say, hey, listen, I feel like I deserve a job. I haven't gotten a job in the NFL. I'm going to go show that I can be a head coach. Let's just say that was actually the case.
Right.
This is the job we're going to take?
No.
After the signing day is already come and gone, when a bunch of these recruits are probably going to try to get out of going to there, it's a program that's done a mess because the coach just bolted right now when he did. That's the job you're going to take over to try to prove it? Screw that. No.
Top two.
Number two.
We've talked about what's going to happen potentially at quarterback for the Raiders. If Derek Carr is going bye-bye, it's got to be an upgrade. I threw Philip Rivers the way of Mike Pritchard, who, by the way, is going to join us on the CU situation at 5:30. And Pritch was like, no. He's like, Philip Rivers is not an upgrade over Derek Carr. Is Cam Newton, and more importantly, is Cam Newton available? This was David Tepper, who was very short, talking about Cam's future in Carolina. Is he going to be a Panther or not?
Listen, I'm not a doctor. You know, and I said it a million times. Is he healthy? And how does? I mean, he's not a doctor. So, you know, there's a lot of different things can happen. But first is he healthy? Tell me that, and then we can talk.
You've made a lot of MLS.
That's it, guys. Thank you.
All right, that was it. PR guy stepped in. David Tepper has 11 minutes, and he's got to go. By the way, after that clip, Tepper was like, go ahead and ask a question.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
All right. How do you read that? I mean, it's logical.
Of course.
Clearly, he's not a doctor.
Yes. It's logical. Is he going to be with the Panthers or not?
Is he healthy?
Is he going to be with the Panthers or not?
Because if you can answer that question, and then we talk.
Don't double David Tepper me.
I think he told you everything you need to know.
If he's not with the Panthers, Adam, is Cam Newton a guy that the Raiders would be interested in? Would he be a good two-year bridge or longer?
I don't know. I don't know if he fits with Gruden. I don't know if that works. I will say I'm pretty sure that John and I have our minds made up who we want as the Raiders quarterback. I don't think there's any dispute or question.
It's a match made in heaven.
I thought there was a bombshell today with Tom Brady and New England and one former NFL player media guy saying he's done in New England, but these guys sent over, they're like, bombshell, this is the bombshell.
That was a pebble in a pond, yeah. My friend.
Jameis Winston got LASIK.
Who cares where Tom Brady goes? Jameis Winston might be available, and he got LASIK. Let's go. Like, let's go, Gruden. Make this happen. Mayock, Gruden, stop looking at quarterbacks in the draft. Stop looking at free agency. You've got your guy.
Imagine what you could do with a Jameis Winston at full strength if you're John Gruden. You could take over the league. You'd have the best offense in the National Football League. 40 touchdowns. Probably 20 interceptions. But
give me A.J. Green, Darren Waller, Tyrell Williams, and Hunter Renfro with Jameis.
Oh, good running game as well. Right behind him. Just balance everything out. Oh, come on.
Actually, he worked well with Breshad Perriman, who's available. Go get Breshad Perriman, too.
It's a really good point. Go get his number two guy. Go grab
just
him.
Just load up, throw every down, 50 touchdowns, 42 interceptions.
Jameis would go to Breshad, but you were 19, huh? No idea. Couldn't see it this whole time.
You do realize you can't cover the beat.
If Jameis plays?
You absolutely are off. Any connection with the Raiders?
First question. Do you realize that we call Ryan Fitzpatrick White Jameis?
He'd love that, I think. He'd be in. Maybe they could get White Jameis.
Oh, if they get Jameis, can you guys cred me up? Like, can I be official ESPN Las Vegas Raider
but
guy?
Can we go? Could they go?
Okay, we're still waiting to assign that title.
Could they get like Fitzpatrick to back up Winston?
Two quarterbacks. You don't have any quarterbacks, man. So let's slow the roll there.
Top story.
Number one.
Is that our Cam Newton discussion?
That was it. It flipped. That's what happened to the Philip Rivers discussion yesterday.
Pritch is he healthy?
Pritch was like, no, he's not an upgrade. I'm like, all right, let's go to break. Today on WEEI, Christian Fourier is part of a three-man show, and he started talking about Brady, but from the standpoint that he believes he's gone and put a number on it's pretty definitive that Brady's not going to be a Patriot.
Wait. Percentage of him coming back? Or
percent of him leaving.
Of leaving. Okay, what is it?
I am putting that at 99.6% Tom Brady never wears a Patriots jersey again.
Next time he
shows up at Gillette Stadium, it'll be either as a guest playing for another team or getting a red jacket.
What is the percentage again?
99.6. He is Gonski.
You love that number. Here's more of the former NFL player telling you why he thinks that Brady is gone. And I think he loops in the rumors about Brady having the house in the Summit here in Vegas.
I believe there is a house. I believe that Tom Brady is no different than Philip Rivers. They're living the same life. Philip Rivers is a free agent now. Tom Brady will be a free agent in, you know, I don't know how many days it's going to be.
Do you think there's a house?
I do think there's a house. Because if I knew I wasn't coming back to the Patriots, because I think the Patriots knew they weren't signing him before the season started. I believe the Patriots are 100% done.
Wow.
That's it.
But I thought 99.6. Yeah, wait, now it's 100%?
And that's where the confusion was. People wrote up 100% on some headlines. Yeah. He says he's done. Now, you listen to what he said, though, right? He said the Patriots are done, which is something you've been saying.
I've been saying it
all
along.
Think it's more of a Patriots decision than a TB12 decision.
Yeah, that's been my take from the beginning. I think the Patriots are ready to move on. They're done with him. And they just have to go through the motions because they don't want the fans to revolt.
One more bite from WEEI as Christian Fourier laying down the law here, saying that, the Patriots don't want him. And, you know, Brady knows. He knows. That's why he's doing what he's been doing lately.
I think the Patriots are okay and ready to move on. And everything that comes out from Ian Rappaport is just bogusness. It's fake. It's narrative changing. It's camouflage. It's not the truth. Because there's going to be this, it's not our fault, fans. They know Brady's not coming back. I don't think they want Brady for $13 million. I don't think they want him, period. And I think that Brady knows it. So why do you like a tweet from the LA Chargers?
Did you see that one? I didn't even get a chance to look it up yet. Did Brady like a tweet from the Chargers?
Must have.
Maybe. I mean, sometimes I like stuff just so I know to go back and read it. Maybe he was doing that. Maybe he was a bookmark.
This is
Steve passively aggressive.
Well, right? It's a little touch screen, but it's also a touch screen. Like, what if he's just scrolling? I accidentally liked it.
Yeah, I've done that.
By the way, I stopped doing that. This is a narrative that we've talked about, that there's a whole campaign of misinformation to kind of set up the PR the right way for the Patriots. Like that $30 million thing.
Like, we're willing to pay him $30 million.
You said immediately that's from the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
Because, hey, we'll pay him top dollar. Hey, he leaves. I mean, it's up to him. This is very reminiscent of what Dean Spanos did in jerking around. What was the whole issue where he planted it and then he intentionally came back and was, like, ripping on the report?
There was something with London.
You can mention it. Let's be an adult here. It was a report that Spanos planted. We believe he planted, right? About the whole London thing. Mm-hmm. And then Spanos comes back the next day and he's like, this is bogus. Ridiculous. Organizations do this all the time. They just do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kraft is playing a game here, at least according, you know, we think so. And now you've got one of the guys on EEI saying it too.
If Tom Brady liked the tweet from the Chargers, he unliked it. Because I've just scrolled through all of his likes for the last 6 months.
That's fast.
Yeah.
What?
He doesn't like very many.
You
liked a tweet from Lewis Hamilton shirtless 6 days ago.
That's a good one.
That's his last like.
Interesting. All right, we're about 10 minutes away from Mike Pritchard, now part of, back again, the Lotus Broadcasting crew on ESPN Las Vegas and Fox Sports Las Vegas. We'll get his take on this whole coach moving at the last minute thing, especially since Mel Tucker crapped all over Pritch's alma mater, Colorado.
The Big 5 at 5, brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers.
Honestly, I saw the ball going down the court, and I thought if I got it, then I was going to take off and try and dunk it. I honestly didn't know there was somebody under the rim until I took off, but at that point, it was bad for him. He was under the rim, so he got dunked on.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live at the Thomas and Mack.
Listen, San Diego State's feeling pretty good about itself right now. They're 25-0. They cut down the nets, which I thought was a little weird for a regular season title. A lot of fanfare. That was Matt Mitchell who threw down a pretty cool dunk with a defender, you know, scurrying away. I think it was one of the little guys, McGee, on New Mexico. And then after the game, you know, you hear Matt Mitchell, who we played some bites from him before the UNLV game here.
Yeah.
And he had talked about the fact that they had – I mean, it's just an honest moment. The fact that they had, you know, dominated like 16 to 17, 15 to 16, whatever it was. He was like, oh, we can always lean on that.
Yeah.
We feel good about going into the game because we've – basically, we always beat them. So, hey, they're riding high right now. I mentioned to you guys off air that there's a prop bet up over at William Hill. Will San Diego State go unbeaten at 18-0 in the Mountain West Conference? Yes is minus 125. No, minus 105. What would you do?
The value is on the no.
Right, because the likelihood, according to the numbers, of them going unbeaten now is what?
Like
over 50%?
50.5%. So it should probably be somewhere around like minus 115. So if it's minus 125, that means the value is on the no. But you have to decide which is the game they're going to lose. No. Now, according to the numbers, two games they're 15 point plus favorites for them, you know, in all likelihood. The other two, they are about an 8-point favorite and about 75% chance to win those two games. I don't know which game they're going to lose. It becomes tough, but the value just very slightly. It wouldn't be enough value for me to bet it. but the value would appear to be on the
you're
no.
You're laying 105 on the no, huh?
Oh, -125, -105?
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I'd rather have
Yeah, maybe
+105?
It does change. If it's a 20-cent line.
I did the yes. Is that a bad bet?
No, I don't think it's terrible.
Say it's, yeah, I wouldn't say it's
awful. It's just about right. Like we said, it's 50.5% according to the computers that they go undefeated, so it's right there.
You know you're going to lay a premium because, you know, the narrative and everything, and you have to shade it a little higher.
Right? I'm paying on the wrong side, no doubt. They have to finish this thing out. If they remain unbeaten all the way until the final game, they have to finish things out at Reno for all the marbles.
Yeah.
I think it's tough.
Some pressure.
And like I said this about the Air Force game, it's just true for just the makeup of that kind of team. When you play teams like a Nevada, like a Colorado State, even an Air Force, like teams that just shoot the ball a lot, like you just run into an issue of if they're just going to come in and have a hot shooting night. Like that's a tough thing to do, to go on the road and take them on.
Again, they close with at Boise, home UNLV, Colorado State, at Reno. So they got two road games. And Reno is one of those teams that can go crazy from three, especially Jalen Harris. And Colorado State certainly can, but they have them at home. So, interesting. Interesting slate the rest of the way. I think they'll lose at Reno, but, man, they've just been so resilient. Every time I thought they would have a little bit of struggle, they've come through. And last night they actually didn't have a great first half. It was 35-33. I had the Lobos plus 16. I'm like, oh, I'm in good shape. And then all of a sudden it was like 5 minutes into the second half, I'm down 21.
This is probably a way too – you know, abstract thing to think about in this real quick time we have here, but how much different is the narrative about San Diego State if that three doesn't go down against San Jose and you have a loss to like a sub 300 team?
And here's the thing, it really wouldn't matter, right? Like in reality, it wouldn't matter. They'd be out of a one seed, but they'd probably get a three.
Yeah.
And it's not like, that's the great thing about the one seed. I mean, it's a nice honor, and in theory you have an easier path, but if you're a 1-2-3 and you're a good team, I don't think you want to be a 4 or 5, but if you're a 1, 2, or 3 and you have a good team, you're gonna make your way through the field.
Well, I know but they're also gonna ship them off to New York and put Duke in their bracket. So like, that's the other part. Like they're gonna get a one seed, but it's not like they're gonna get a favorable path.
No doubt. Mike Pritchard is on the way. A guy who played at Colorado, and man, that program right now is in upheaval and really annoyed at their ex-coach.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
What a day of football news, believe it or not, in February.
Jameis thing's a game changer, man.
And these guys, their blockbuster story of the day, Adam and JBT, is Jameis Winston, their favorite quarterback, maybe of all time in the NFL, finally getting LASIK.
Second.
That's a good point. The other one is still in the NFL and taking over the Chargers. This Colorado thing is massive. There's so many layers to the story of a coach bailing on university after 3 days before, tweeting out that he's committed, a year before saying, transfer portal, ain't no such thing like that. That's not the real world. And now Mel Tucker's gone after 1 year at Colorado, leaving him in a lurch. Mike Pritchard played at Colorado. Mike, you and I were on the air yesterday together. The story didn't hit while we were on the air, but my God, you must be, as a Colorado guy, you got to be peeved.
Oh, I had my meltdown. I absolutely had my meltdown. Been on the radio all day, all across the country, really. It's been nuts. You know, I got so many thoughts on this that I'm no longer disgusted by it, but like I still have a bad taste on the system, how it's broken, everything that's going on in college football, and really the ugly side of college football. I mean, the business of college football and amateur sport, it doesn't work. But yet we are promoting and elevating people based on the business of college football, and it's sickening.
So I guess just first of all, as Steve pointed out, you had the comments from him last year about there's no transfer portal in the real world. These kids need to stick with it, not be moving around all the time. And then he does this. What are your thoughts on somebody who has that stance and then makes a decision like this?
He's a liar. That's what he is. I mean, there's no other thought that you can have on somebody like Mel Tucker other than the fact that he lacks credibility. He has zero character. And they hide behind, well, this is best for my family. No, it's not. It's best for you and you only. That's all. Your family is going to move with you no matter where you go. Your family is going to support you no matter where you go. You're not looking out for your family. You saw a better opportunity, you think it is, and you jumped at it. It doesn't matter who you lied to, who you deceived, who you crushed, and who you created uncertainty for on your way as you walk up your own ladder.
Mike, what kind of gets me, too, here is the timing of all of it. Like, we're a week away from all of these kids, you know, committing their lives, or at least the foreseeable future of their lives, to go play for him. And then a week later, he's gone. And to me, it sucks because I don't think he'll ever take a hit like this. But, like, if you're a parent from here on out, if he comes into your living room and says, hey, I want your kid to come play for me, you know, I'll raise him to be a young man, an upstanding gentleman. Like, I don't trust you, man. You did this a week after some of these kids signed their letters of intent and said they want to come be with you for those reasons.
All right, not even close to that. I mean, it's snake oil. That's yep. what he is. I mean, how do you trust him? Good luck, Michigan State. And maybe he can sell people on that program. Maybe you don't have to sell them that much. I mean, there's a lot of talent up in that area. You're talking about East Lansing. You're talking about Detroit. I mean, there's a lot of football up there. So maybe his job is easier from that standpoint, recruiting. Here's what made me nuclear, really, because I was just thinking about it. And it's like we stripped Reggie Bush of Heisman and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, people got to give back trophies because mom got a house, right? USC wrote a check to mom, right? But okay, wait a minute. You can be a coach, and here comes Michigan State that writes a bigger check, and they could just take the coach. So how is that different? How is that different? Just because it's a college kid versus a professional coach? Okay. You want to go that route, we'll cut it off then. You got a signing period in February, you know, up until that point, or even if it's January, certainly December, you got to cut it off. If a team is interested in a coach and they want to hire him, you got to do it before this date. You can't do it after kids sign a letter of intent and to go to a university based on what that previous coach has said to them.
Is there any blame that you place at all on Colorado or the conference in general? We talked earlier, the Pac-12 coaches' salaries are not what they are in the other Power 5 conferences. Any blame at all go to either Colorado or the conference just for not having coaches' salaries higher?
You know, you can say that. I think there's some blame to it. But how do you increase the pay for all your coaches in the conference? I don't know how. Okay, the Big Ten. I think the average salary in the Big Ten is $3.5 million. That includes Rutgers, you know, and so when the average salary is $3.5 million in the Big Ten, they have a bigger, stronger TV deal. It's a stronger conference than the Pac-12 has been. I think the Pac-12 has been mismanaged over the years. You can't compete with the SEC, certainly. So, yeah, you're going to lose coaches, but that's part of the business side of it, and I understand that. But if you're going to lose them to where people can at least adjust to it. Mel Tucker knew exactly what he was doing when he took the job. He knew it was going to wreck Colorado, and he knew it was going to promote and help Michigan State prosper. Here's a novel idea. The fact that Michigan State is in this predicament, why don't they go with the interim head coach and then go on a coaching search next year? Why are they allowed to just write a larger check and just fuck any coach that they want at that point?
Mike Pritchard with us. He's not happy. His Buffs have lost their coach right after signing day. By the way, your little mention of Rutgers there. The Rutgers coach makes $4 million a year. He's getting 32 over 8 years. I don't love the deal. Their salary pool for assistants is $7.7 million. So how about you step up at CU with some money? The other scenario that's really interesting, and this is going to be one to follow like the next 5 days, your guy, Eric Bieniemy, is getting mentioned by a lot of people. Hey, go take a head coaching job. You want to be a head coach? Go to Colorado. I think he's going to be in a weird position here now where he shouldn't take the job. He should stay in the NFL, but he may look like a bad guy, and then a lot of people are going to come back and go, hey, bro, do you want to be a coach or not?
No. You know, I think it's going to be a little bit different now because, okay, Rick Dorsey named Darren Cheverini the interim head coach right now. So there's some continuity there, basically promoting the assistant head coach, the head coach, because you got to get through spring ball. You got to at least create some type of optimism going into the summer for your program, and certainly for your recruits that signed the letter of intent and they're stuck because there's no scholarships to go to, even if you released them. So, you know, for Eric Bieniemy, he's going to have so many opportunities, I believe. There's a mounting pressure in the National Football League for more coaches, especially Eric, black coaches, minority coaches, however you want to phrase it. There's certainly more pressure building on that. So I fully expect Eric to have an opportunity. And to go back and see you under these circumstances, I said it earlier. It has rapidly become a very, very tough job within the Pac-12. Not only Division I, but in the Pac-12 for anybody who takes over as head coach at FCU.
I saw a list earlier with the name Brett Bielema on it. How fired up are you for that?
Oof.
Man, that's spitballs right there, Adam. You know, that's spitballing right there. I mean, I wouldn't be fired up at all with that. I'm okay with Severini because he's a buff. I am like what people are about having a Michigan man. You know, I fully believe that there's a lot of people that have gone through the University of Colorado that are highly qualified to be a head coach there. So it's about the profile. It's about bringing the program back to prominence again if we can, and certainly get back on that national stage like we had it when I was there. So Rick George is in charge. He wants that too, and we'll see what happens.
Pritch, we appreciate it on short notice, and I'm sure you'll be on all the stations the next couple of days talking about this as well. And you're in with us next Wednesday, so thanks for the spot on short notice.
Hey, right on, guys. Have a good one.
There you go. Mike Pritchard back with ESPN Las Vegas, back with the LV Sports Network. You're going to hear him a lot on JT the Brick Show over on Fox 1340 and also on the press box right here on ESPN Las Vegas.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.
Jalen Harris quickly into the front court. Harris drives, kicks it right side to Drew for a three, and he hits. That's the transition offense that Reno is able to run.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live at the Thomas and Mack.
Real good offensive team. Reno's bringing in, and they lit up the Rebels from three, especially Jalen Harris. If Lindsey Drew, you heard in the highlight there with John Sandler, if Lindsey Drew's hitting threes, then that means they're on freaking fire. We got a full crew here getting ready for the 6 o'clock hour. We'll go till 6:30 with John and Curtis on Running Rebel Warm-Up. JBT is going to take over. Adam Hill, Mike Grimalo from the Las Vegas Sun is in. I feel like I'm in the presence of, like, real TV people who really care about their appearance. Grimalo's got his lucky pants that he got for $10 at TJ Maxx up in Logan, Utah.
Wow.
So he's going to be wearing those a lot. He's got a lovely sweater. Von Tobel just swoons over Grimalo's hair. And then, I'm watching I saw a video tweeted out with Adam Hill yesterday in a makeup chair. I don't know what's happening. And you're a TV guy with VSiN. I'm in the – I don't know what this stuff is.
Yeah, I got to do my hair a lot. It sucks.
You got makeup people too?
No makeup. Late night, you know. I don't really care.
Well, listen, us big stars, John. When you're really gonna, go through a photo shoot or get on TV.
Foundation?
Yeah, he had some foundation. Oh, yeah.
Did you get some blush too? Did it rose in your cheeks up a little bit?
I mean, I'm as they said, I was naturally gorgeous, but
is there any fair that you're gonna get addicted to the makeup? Like, if you see yourself looking good in it once, you're going to want to wear it more often?
Always look good. I mean, that's not
but
even...
There's only one person at VSiN who does makeup every day before they go on the air. They seem pretty addicted to it.
Who is it?
Well, it's got to be one of our former coworkers. It's one of them.
No, it's not.
Really?
No. It's he used to be on a show that you enjoy very much.
Oh, wow. Wow. Can I say the name?
That's Patrick Maher.
It's Patrick Maher. Yeah.
He's a beautiful man. Yeah. He doesn't need the makeup. He's naturally beautiful. Okay. One other thing to get out of the way, I believe that by the looks of it, that Adam actually let someone touch his eyebrows.
That was my next question.
Because I looked at that video and I was like, those are not the same Andy Rooney, Bushy, trademark eyebrows. I think you had eyebrow work.
They're not touching his hat. That's the key
factor. My hat. Just have my hat lifted up further than
did
usual.
Someone work on your eyebrows?
No.
Okay. I'm going to give you one more piece of advice.
I get mine done every month.
I live with a makeup artist. And I do believe that she could open up your eyes more with the right makeup around your eyes.
I don't think so. I just have narrow eyes. I mean, the doctor even told me I can't get contacts because my eyes are too small.
Very cat-like.
But
I'm going to show her a picture.
But he's talking about, like, giving the appearance.
Yeah.
I don't worry about
that. I think
that.
Adam with open eyes would be creepy.
Yeah, it would be creepy. You're right.
Like, why? He looks like Adam Gase now. Meanwhile, they're not really open, but it'll be so different.
Okay. Like, no glasses, Adam, throws me off. So I can't imagine, like, open-eyed.
Should I do the rest of the show? No glasses? Like, pull that
Yeah,
off.
No glasses.
Open
crazy.
Your eyes really wide. Yeah, dude.
Makeup could do that, though.
Why?
Yeah,
why?
You look insane. What's scarier, John? Because you've seen both. No glasses, Adam, or no hat, Koken.
Oh.
I only saw Koken with his hat off like three, and I've been around Koken for like literally going back to the late 90s. It may have been five times that he's had the Kangol off, and mostly for the national anthem. And it's worse than Hey Reb with the hat off.
The only time I ever
Hey Reb with the hat off is horrifying.
I never thought of that.
He takes it off for the anthem.
He's so old.
I've never looked.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't you shocked by it, Mike? Have you seen Hey Reb with the hat off?
I think I've seen a picture of it, but I've never noticed it at a game.
In National Anthem, watch tonight.
Watch it tonight.
It's a respectful mascot.
But he's a young-looking mascot, and then when he takes the hat off, you're like, man, he's an old guy.
I didn't even realize the hat came off. It was just
got to for the anthem.
By the way, I've seen Koken with the hat off one time, and it was because he took his headphones off too quick, and it knocked the hat off, and it was and like, had to go straight to get it back on.
That's awesome. That is his look. That is his look, the Bruce Arians like hat.
Well, it's any guy who goes balding in the middle, like that's the move, because then you can keep the sides long and have the appearance of actually like still having long and
full. So Larry David.
Well, he rocks the baldness though, doesn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Do you think the Hey Reb mascot is built with like stilts inside the leg so that it's impossible for him to kneel during the anthem?
So he's just so respectful.
He can take his hat off, but he has to stand straight up.
Oh, that's weird, dude. All right, it just crashed.
Okay, yes.
That's really weird.
But think about the absolute mind F.
My computer crashed.
Think about the absolute mind F that would be. If he knelt during the national anthem.
But he's a rebel.
But he's a rebel, so there are people who hate his name because it's like both sides would be triggered.
Yeah.
What do you do at that point?
Actually, now I'm mad that he doesn't kneel. He's a rebel.
So we've officially spiraled. This usually happens as soon as Steve leaves.
I know.
It happened before. Path.
I went down
the
spider.
I just remember. I remember the one year where the rebel at the basketball game seemed to have a little bit of a stomach. There was a lot of controversy. Remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh yeah, the mascot uniform was a little small, like 3 years ago.
I do remember.
And like
that.
Had a really nice, a perfectly round belly, and he was an Audi too, and like you could totally tell.
Oh no,
Mike and JVT have both now seen Hey Reb without the hat on.
Oh, that's terrifying.
It's jarring. Totally jarring.
I didn't even know the heck it was.
So, Mike, I ran a bet by these guys, college basketball bet of future, San Diego State to go unbeaten the rest of the way, so finish 18-0 in the Mountain West Conference.
Yes.
Yes is minus 125. No is minus 105.
Yes.
Wow, that was quick.
Easy.
You don't think you're going to lose at Boise? And at last game, there's going to be a ton of pressure against this Reno team. Maybe you'll have a full house there. I hope they have a full house of, you know, a little over 11. What if Reno goes out and just they're hot as a pistol and hit 14 threes?
I think San Diego State would still beat them. Unless they rest players or do something like that because they've already clinched, you know, the regular season and the first seed. Unless they do something like that, they're just so much better than everyone else at this point that they don't need their A game to win these games. That's my feeling.
Congrats to Eli, our winner of our Sky Diamonds giveaway. You can listen tomorrow during Cofield and Company for the Sky Diamond Sounder. Caller 14, when the Sounder plays, we'll win a pair of VGK tickets tomorrow. And then you're qualified to win our $1,000 Sky Diamond gift card giveaway. Sky Diamonds, located in Town Square, where Las Vegas gets engaged. Eli was our winner today. ESPN Las Vegas on campus officially kicks in less than 3 minutes.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
You know, UNLV job opened before the Nevada job opened. There's some jobs, you know, just no go to and don't even apply for. I got too much of a history. I'm sorry, but that's just what it is. When Indiana and UNLV and Tark and Coach Knight were going at it, I was part of that. And when you're a part of it, when I go into Thomas and Mac, I get booed every time. That's part of it. That's what I love about it. That's what I love about the competition.
Now, back to Cofield and Company. Live at the Thomas and Mack.
Just the company Steve Cofield has decided to depart. He's getting ready for his role on the sideline for UNLV going into action in about 58 minutes from now. That was the voice of Steve Alford, head coach of the Nevada Wolfpack.
The what?
Oh, sorry, Reno.
By the way, L-O-L-O-L-O-L at that comment.
So let's open up with this, because Alford seems to insinuate in that bite right there, well, there's just a job that you just don't even apply for it. UNLV was one of them. One, did they even want him? And two, do UNLV fans care enough about him that they actually boo him every time he comes back?
They do hate him.
Okay.
Well, the net around the neck thing
that
he used to do, which was obnoxious, but he absolutely wanted this job. That's such nonsense.
It's not quite what he did. It's not quite a humble brag, because he's not being humble.
What would you call it?
It's just like he's just trying to brag.
A braggy brag.
Yeah.
But a brag, like, it has to be something that's tangible that might have or actually happened, right?
It's like a backhanded brag. Like,
I was so good, I didn't even want that job.
Yeah.
Stop it.
It's a hipster brag.
Yeah, it would be like me, like, oh, I don't like the way Ferraris handle. You know, I like something a little roomier, so that's why I drive a Nissan.
That's why you
like
never see me in one, you know?
Yeah. So, I'm not going to put a lot of stock into that comment.
That's Mike Grimala, who's here, by the way, Adam Hill. So I said I had something for you. God, do I have something for
you. I've got a lot from his Twitter, but go ahead. Do with yours.
You've changed my life.
Oh, boy. This is not the way I was hoping this would go. I was hoping to go negative.
Started using a new hair product.
Oh, God.
And it has changed my world.
One that he uses?
Not the same, but it's the paste. It comes in the little tin, you know?
Is it from TJ Maxx?
No, it's my brand? It's the Axe brand. Clean cut, you know? But it's good. You know, put a little on your hands, boom, just like that. No hairspray. Used to use the hairspray. Don't anymore.
Your hair does look good.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I need a haircut, but, Mike, you've changed my life.
Oh, yeah. It's a recent move for me as well.
Look at the life and the bounce that hair has.
Yeah, it's called Groom. If you're ever like shopping around and you want to try it, because I checked the last time you asked me about it. It's called Groom brand, and you can only find it in TJ Maxx, as far as I know. And it's like $2.99.
You're like a TJ Maxx spokesperson.
Oh, I am. They don't even have to pay me. I wouldn't even accept it if they tried. That's how much I love it.
What about in free paste?
I don't even want it. I want to
free Groom.
I want to be free to patronize that store as a regular consumer.
What if TJ came up to you himself?
Is there Mike a TJ?
I mean, I would assume.
I think there is.
TJ Maxx.
I mean, I'd have to consider it, but no. I do it out of love. I shop there out of love.
What are your issues?
My issues with him? First of all, I do want to get into actual basketball stuff. So my biggest issue, I want to talk about.
I got a good basketball topic for you.
Mike made the point, or he tried to. I hope he was just being sarcastic or joking, that Marvin Coleman is, quote, clutch.
Yep.
You know there's no such thing.
There is.
What is your case? And by the way, that, you know, when you make a shot like that, it just covers up the fact that it was a bad play.
He has made a lot of clutch plays this year. Does that make him clutch forever in perpetuity going forward? Or does it say something about his character? I'm not going to go that far, but it would be, I'm not going to deny that he has made a bunch of clutch plays, and he has been the guy that's made the most clutch plays for them this year. So those are two different things. I guess one of them, it's not going to guarantee that in the future it's going to continue, but who's made more big shots than him?
Well, I asked you a couple weeks ago, did you go back yet? Because I know you in your last piece you kind of mentioned some of the numbers in terms of if the game's tight. Did you go back and look at some of the clutch time numbers?
Yeah, in the last 5 minutes of regulation or overtime with the score within 5 points, he's 5 of 7 from the field, 4 of 6 from three-point range, 4 of 4 from the free throw line. He also had another big three-pointer to cut it from 7 to 4, which didn't fit into the within 5 criteria.
Yep.
But another big shot during their comeback, another comeback win they had, I believe, at Wyoming. So, I mean, he hasn't really not come through in those situations.
So if he misses the next three, is he then not clutch?
I don't know. I'm just saying he has been clutch so far. He has made clutch plays. Does that make him clutch? That's the debate.
My real problem, with the Marvin Coleman,
he's clutch.
You referred to it as a, quote, buzzer beater.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, there's a specific – a buzzer beater is when the shot goes up and the buzzer goes off while the shot is in the air. There was still time left after the shot.
Yeah, but that's what he was trying to be. He didn't just take that shot because he wanted to. He was trying to beat the buzzer. He was up against the buzzer.
Well, there's not any buzzer-beating shots.
Okay, there was a final game-ending shot. Yes. He's trying to beat the end of the game.
There was, what, 0.3 seconds left on the clock when he hit it, or what?
0.8. They put 0.8 on the clock.
It's not a buzzer beater.
But he wasn't just taking it for his health. He was taking it because the buzzer.
It's not subjective.
No, I think Grimal is right.
A buzzer
last
looming.
Last second shot.
The buzzer was looming.
It's
that's
a last
why
second shot, not a buzzer beater.
I mean, to me, that's a buzzer beater.
He was trying to beat the buzzer.
Nah, I just completely disagree. I'll do one more basketball thing from your Twitter. Not a problem, but you did write about David Jenkins, a guy that a lot of people are very interested in. How is he helping right now, even though he's not able to be on the court?
He's the loud voice. Like, he's the big personality. He's the guy that's just outsized, talking to everyone, clapping everyone on the back, organizing those late-night shooting runs to the Mendenhall Center. He's that guy that's been to the NCAA tournament, knows what it's like to win games and win conference tournament games and what it's like to get there. And he takes that seriously. Like, he's not – he doesn't just have that experience. He has the experience, and he realizes that it's important for him to teach the rest of this team about it. So he's important from that sense. And also in practice, you know, he's on the scout team. He's busting guys in practice. He's making them defend hard. He's just been – everyone I talk to, coaches, other players, they just say that he's been great this year in his redshirt year. Like, all you can ask for from a redshirt player.
How beneficial is it for him to have played for Otzelberger and to be – to be able to send that message even when Otzelberger's not around, to just be that guy that's like, hey, this is what we have to do, and this is the process that we take, and when we do it, it ends up with a lot of success. We play in the NCAA tournament. That's what we've done before.
He understands that because he, unprompted, he brought that up to me when I asked him something sort of related about leadership, and he said, you know, it's one thing for the coaches to say it, but you need players to say it too. You need players to teach it at the floor level. And it just sounds different when your teammates are pointing things out and telling you how certain plays are to be run. And he takes that role seriously. Like, he takes all this stuff seriously. He's not just spending a year frivolously sitting out waiting for his redshirt to expire. He's really trying to make something of this season. And that's part of it, is that leadership and getting the system in place. He wants to hit the ground running next year. He thinks they can contend for the NCAA tournament. So this year is sort of, he's trying to do what he can behind the scenes to lay the groundwork for that, whether it's leadership, getting the system in place, getting guys familiar with the playbook, teaching them how to defend in the system, everything that goes along with it. That's what he's are his main priorities.
Did he tell you how tough it is for him to not be playing?
Yeah. I mean, he talked about the San Diego State game, which was here a couple weeks ago, and how, like, down the stretch of that game, it was killing him to not be in there. And he said, you know, he knows if he was out on the floor, they would have won that game, and they would have ended the undefeated season, and how great it would have been. And so he said, like, that's the hard thing. But, you know, he knew that coming here, you know, he knew there was no chance he was going to get a waiver or anything like that. They knew he was going to have to sit out. He was prepared to do it. So he's been able to handle it from that sense. But it's still obviously, like, for those kids, that's a long time to sit out and not play basketball when you're healthy.
How good, in your mind, I mean, we haven't seen it, we don't know yet, and we've seen transfers have different levels of success in this league. Certainly it's working for San Diego State right now. David Jenkins steps into the league next year. How good is he at this level in the Mountain West?
The team thinks that he's like an all-Mountain West player. They think he's going to come in, score 20 points a game, shoot the three-pointer, and just be a great player. Like, they think he'll be the number one option. This is a team that has Bryce Hamilton averaging, you know, 20 a game in Mountain West play. Hardy's having a pretty good year, decent year. And they think Jenkins is just going to step right in and be the man for an NCAA caliber team. So that's what the internal expectations are. I don't see any reason to counter that. I don't think the jump from the Summit League to the Mountain West for a player like him is that great. He's not the most athletic dude. He's, you know, a big, thickly built shooting guard who's, you know, do most of his damage outside the arc, but I think that translates.
We haven't seen him play without Mike Daum, though.
It's true.
That is true. I don't. UNLV is not going to have a guy like that. Yeah. So we'll see how it.
Nobody has
yeah.
a guy like that.
So we're going to see how it translates with you know, different personnel around him. But that's where T.J. Otzelberger comes in. I think we've seen enough from him this year to sort of come to the conclusion that he's a pretty good offensive coach and he can adjust on the fly. I don't think there's any question that Otzelberger and Jenkins are going to figure out a way to make it work. Like, those two, I trust completely to make it work.
To Mike Grimal, the Las Vegas Sun. He's going to stick around for the next 15 minutes. When we come back, we will get into the matchup tonight. Big rivalry spot as Reno is in town to take on UNLV at the Thomas and Mack Center.
Hit up Cofield and Company on Facebook. Like ESPN Las Vegas.
up by six, 15 minutes to go. Harris, top of the key, reverses the ball to Zhao, blocked by Hamilton. Now to Harris, a three from the right side is good. Second time Marvin Bowman was a step late getting out there.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live at the Thomas and Mack.
No Cofield. We're about 13 minutes away from handing it off to John and Curtis for running Rebel warm-up. Make sure you stick around here on ESPN Las Vegas for every second of action as Wolfpack is in town to take on TJ Otzelberger's running Rebels. Adam Hill and Mike Romala is here, hopefully is here throughout the entire entire game, because you have a track record of being kicked out of events, huh?
Dynamite. I didn't know where you were going. That's that's impressive.
That's a good one, right?
The Oscars were just this weekend. I saw a tweet from you, and John did too, that you were once kicked out of an Oscar ceremony, which got us very intrigued.
I was. It was a long time ago. It was in, I want to say, 2005. It was the year that Brokeback Mountain was the big movie, and Crash ended up winning Best Picture.
Crash was amazing.
Yes. I didn't like it that much.
What?
I thought Brokeback Mountain was
Wait,
a much better
yes?
movie. Confirming that it was a good movie. It wasn't the Best Picture, but
okay.
I lived in LA at the time, only a few blocks away from the theater, so I wanted to go to the ceremony. So I just looked up online like how you could get in, and they just had a media place where you could apply for media credentials. So I did, and where it's had like a media outlet. This was like the very early advent of online media.
Run Revs.
I just put blogger. And with no other outlet or anything, and no editor's name or anything, and it got approved. And I showed up about 2 weeks before they give you your credentials. Then, like, there's like a nominees luncheon like the week before, which I didn't go to, but I got my official credential and everything. Went to the ceremony, and it's very limited to where media can want you, where you're supposed to be. Just you watch it on closed circuit. But I had a pass, so I just and I was wearing, you know, the tuxedo and everything. So I just walked around for like an hour before the show. I walked around the red carpet for a little bit. I saw Salma Hayek on the red carpet. Then I walked inside and I walked past the media area, and I just walked out onto the stage talking like maybe 45 minutes before the show went on the air. And I just walked out onto the stage, and I walked up to the podium, like in the middle of the stage, and I called one of my friends, and I was like, hey, I'm just walking around here. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't think I was going to get that far. And then security just grabbed me, brought me into a basement interrogation room, interrogated me for like an hour.
What did they ask you?
Just like, where are you from?
What do you blog?
Who approved this? Yeah, that kind of stuff. And I just, you know, I BS'd my way through it. But they kept me down there for like 30, 45 minutes, yanked the credential chain right off my neck.
Wow.
Like in a movie. Snatched it right off, grabbed me by the arm, took me out the back door, and said, you're on a list now. You can't come back. Thank you. And I left.
You applied under your real name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
because you have to show ID or something at some point.
You did tweet out, I believe, before the ceremony that you thought Parasite was the best film of the year.
It was the best that I saw.
Is it a horror or what? Like, what is
it? No, Mike doesn't want you to know.
Okay. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, he said don't read about it. Don't read a review. Don't read a summary.
I just saw a preview, and it looks horror-esque.
It's everything. It's sort of it's several different genres. Have you seen it, Adam?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, it's good. It's all different. There's really no way to categorize it except to say that it's really good.
This is the worst. Who will win Best Supporting Actor tonight for the Rebels?
Nice.
Against... Wow.
I'd say.
I tried. That was
bad.
Awful.
Yeah,
I'd say
bad.
Marvin Coleman, because he's so clutch that he comes through with all those pressure situations.
Okay, here's a serious question then, if we're going to get on this just as rough
as
possible.
You don't think my segue was serious?
No, not really. So we've talked about this before, Mike, you and I, especially when we've been on this. And we saw it against Nevada when they went on the road. Reno, sorry. This type of team gives them trouble, UNLV. A team that can space you out, can shoot it from almost every single position. A team that will move the ball around until the last 5 seconds of the shot clock and then find an open shooter and be able to drain it. BYU, this Nevada team, Colorado State. So what is going to change here against Reno, other than the fact that maybe the Wolfpack's just not a good road team and they might not show up?
I don't think UNLV is going to drastically alter their defense. Like, they're pretty committed. They're going to sag. They're going to sink on any kind of, like, penetration, even though Nevada's not the type of team that's going to penetrate that much. You know, they're bottom 25 in shots around the rim as an offense in the country. They are a jump-shooting team, but UNLV is going to honor that penetration. They're going to try and cut them off. They're going to give up the three-pointer. And if you're the Rebels, you're probably just hoping that their Nevada's road record comes through. They're what, 1-9 on the road, 1-7, something like that.
The only win is Air Force. Yep.
Yeah. So you're just going to hope that their hot shooting from the earlier matchup comes back down to earth on the road. And you hope that enough UNLV fans show up to make this a hostile road atmosphere. And you hope that they don't shoot 50% from three. You hope that they shoot 30% from three and that you can keep up with
it. I mean, last year, Adam, I don't know if you were here or not. I think you were at a Knights game. I mean, last year for the Reno game, I thought the crowd was really solid. Now, it was Eric Musselman. That team was very good in Reno, and maybe that attracted a lot more people. But it seemed like the turnout was pretty good. The San Diego State game here a couple of weeks ago was pretty good. It seems like the arena is filling up a little bit more as the season has gone on. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. I'll see what happens to the crowd with a couple of losses here. Now, yeah, they did win the last game, but they had four losses in a row. We'll see how it kind of bounces back. But I just wanted to go back to what Mike was saying about the threes, because I know our friend and yours, Tyler Bischoff, makes the case that defenses have zero to do with their opponent's three-point shooting. I get it. I feel like there's a little bit that they have to do with it, forcing worse shots, you know, making guys not be able to just catch in a rhythm and shoot. Like, there's certain things, make them shoot off a dribble, those sorts of things that you can do. Where do you stand on the defenses don't impact their opponent's three-point shooting?
You can probably impact mostly which players maybe are taking them, or which guys you want to help off of, and how strategically you want to do that. Like, if you want to put two guys on Jalen Harris and just deny him the ball and face guard him, you might be able to keep the ball out of his hands a little bit and keep him from getting any catch and shoot open looks. But they have enough guys on this Nevada team that someone else is going to be open, and you don't. If it's an open shot, there's obviously no way to defend that. Most of the time, depending on the quality of the shooter, like, some of these shooters are so good now that even if you put a hand in their face, it doesn't affect them. They're not even looking at your hand. They're just shooting as if you're not there. So I do agree that most of these guys, like a team like Nevada, they're going to get the shots, and they're probably just going to make them or miss them regardless of how you defend it. Like, there's a difference between giving a guy 10 feet of space and putting a hand in his face, but anything in between that is not going to make that much of a difference in their percentage overall. Any fluctuation is probably just going to be small sample size from game to game.
Last time they played, 18 offensive rebounds for UNLV. They should be able to get theirs, right, in terms of on the glass. So you should be able to play the style of game that you want on your offense.
They should be, but then I thought UNLV would do pretty well on the offensive glass against Fresno State, and they didn't. And that's two games in a row now, and the trend that I'm looking at now is they played Utah State for the second time, and Utah State walled them off from the offensive glass. They played Fresno State for the second time, and Fresno did sort of the same thing. Is it now that teams have played UNLV once and they understand, that how hard UNLV goes after the offensive rebounds and how important that is to them, are opposing teams adjusting to that now and making that more of a focus for their own game plan? Is that something that's on the UNLV scouting report now? Hey, we have to keep these guys off the offensive glass at all costs. So we have to see them. I want to see them do that against a team for the second time before I think that that's something that's just going to continue.
And I thought, Adam, I'll pick your brain on this, because I use the term it's not the greatest one, but I thought UNLV has kind of achieved its perfect form in terms of Otzelberger's gotten almost everything out of this team. He has squeezed almost every ounce of juice out of the turnip, onion, whatever fruit you want to use, or vegetable.
The one that's usually used.
And I think it's hard in certain cases, like Mike's bringing up, like the last few games, they haven't been as dominant in the offensive glass, and that is one of their key strengths. With a roster that is this limited, if you're going to be kept off of the glass, then this is going to be something where this team, and as we've seen it, is going to struggle down the stretch.
Well, it's certainly the number one thing on the scouting report. Like, when you're playing UNLV, your practice the day before is basically like an hour and a half of throwing the ball off the rim and everybody fighting to try to box somebody out and making sure they stay off the glass. So, you've got to overcome not only everything else that you've been trying to figure out and trying to improve upon, but also now trying to overcome the fact that everybody knows what your strength is, everybody knows what you're trying to do, and you still have to try to, find a way to do that. And I think they will. But, you mentioned how much they've gotten out of this team, how much Otzelberger's got out. The biggest thing I was concerned about at the time was, how long can that last? How long can you give maximum effort? We know in the NBA, you have to have load management, all those other things. You can't just go all out a million miles an hour every game, and I think that they're finding that out a little bit.
Yep. Seems pretty fair. All right, Grimala, what are you thinking tonight?
Nevada. 80-74, something like that.
80-74.
UNLV
74-68. Ooh, you got him winning, huh?
Yeah.
74. I will go. I will go Reno as well. I will go with 80-75. Reno gets the win here. If I said it really quickly, offensive rebound 7.5 for UNLV. You going over or under?
Over.
Over.
Okay. Seemed like a low number. 8.5.
Under.
Ooh, now it makes you think. Yeah,
under,
so
it's
the middle. All right.
Right at 8.
Running Rebel warm-up coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas. Make sure you check it out. I know, Ari. We're out of here.